like to discuss the symbiotic relationship between a bacterial endosymbiont and an invasive psyllid right here in California. So to begin, I just want to give a brief overview on bacterial endosymbionts harbored in insects. As many of you may already know, bacterial endosymbionts are found in a wide diversity of different insect orders. And in general, there are two types of bacterial endosymbionts, primary symbionts and secondary symbionts. And so primary symbionts are obligate for host survival and reproduction, and their role is thought to generally be nutritional enrichment of their insect hosts. Alternatively, secondary symbionts are facultative, so meaning they're not obligate for host survival and reproduction. And their roles are actually quite variable. For example, a particular secondary symbiont may be a reproductive manipulator of their insect host, such as Wolbachia or Cardinium. On the other hand, a secondary symbiont may be beneficial for their insect host. So, for example, recently, some results that are emerging out of the P. aphid study system are showing that secondary symbionts can actually confer resistance to a parasitic wasp and a fungal entomopathogen. In addition, a particular secondary symbiont may confer thermal tolerance and also facilitate host plant specialization. So all these roles are incredibly important for the insect host, not only from an ecological standpoint, but evolutionary point of view. So that's what brings me to my overall research question of, what is the role of secondary symbionts? And also, how are insect microbial interactions maintained on a landscape level through time? So to start to address this rather broad question, I searched for a good candidate study system. And so what I found was the exotic study system of Glycaspis brimacomi, also known as a red gum lerp psyllid. So just briefly some background on this study system. This psyllid, it invaded California in 1998 from Australia, and it's a phloem feeder. And you can actually see the egg, nymph, as well as adult stages of the psyllid here on this slide. And so this psyllid prefers to colonize particularly red gum eucalyptus species, particularly Eucalyptus camaldulensis, and this particular host plant is planted throughout much of the entire state of California. And so the psyllid is actually quite a pest on this host plant. It causes frequent defoliations and can actually cause tree mortality, and which has been seen in some locations throughout California. So consequently, in about 2001, a parasitic wasp seen right here called Psyllophagus blidius was released to control this psyllid. And so what has been found after 3 years of pre- and post-release data is that this parasitoid effectively regulates the psyllid's population in some areas, but not really well in others. And so consequently, a parasitism gradient has been established among the psyllid's populations. And so what's interesting about this particular study system is that the entire system is exotic, from the host plant, the herbivore, to the natural enemy. So consequently, community structure of the study system is relatively simplistic, and essentially it's kind of like an island-like system supplanted in California. And so to take advantage of this exotic study system in regard to secondary symbionts, I want to address two objectives. My first objective is to describe the frequency and distribution of secondary symbionts within and among the psyllid's populations throughout California. So is there more than one secondary symbiont present? Second, I want to relate secondary symbiont infection frequency in these psyllid populations to important environmental gradients. So in other words, this may suggest a potential role that the secondary symbiont may confer to its insect host. For my methods then, I collected psyllids from multiple populations throughout the entire state of California, and this was in June of 2006 I conducted this collection trip. So I'll be presenting to you data from 19 of these populations with a total of 380 psyllids that I screened for the secondary symbiont. So that's 20 from each population. I also measured percent parasitism, and weather data from each location as well. So what I found then under my first objective by using PCR detection is that at least one type of secondary symbiont is present among all psyllid populations in California. In addition, what I found, which I think is particularly interesting, is that not all psyllid individuals within a single population are infected with this secondary symbiont. So consequently, I was able to calculate secondary symbiont infection frequencies for each location. So if you concentrate your attention on this map of California here, Each pie graph represents the location I sampled in June of 2006, and then red portion within the pie graph represents the percentage of psyllid individuals which are infected with the secondary symbiont. And so you could see quite a bit of variation here in secondary symbiont infection frequency. It actually ranges from 0 to 75% with an overall average of 42% infection. And I just want to note the X's on this map represent locations I went to go sample in, but the host plant, therefore, psyllid was not present. Moving on now to my second objective, I wanted to relate this variation that I found in secondary symbiont infection frequency to important environmental gradients. So I looked at several environmental parameters such as percent peristatism, latitude, longitude, so spatial coordinates, as well as temperature, precipitation, and level of infestation, which is basically a surrogate measure of psyllid population density. So by using stepwise regression, I found that only one environmental variable was significantly related to infection frequency, and interestingly, that was percent peristatism. So more specifically, this is a positive relationship between infection frequency and percent peristatism. So in other words, in populations with high peristatism pressure, there's a high probability of sampling psyllid individuals that harbor the secondary symbiont. And it's important to note that the psyllids I sampled were healthy, unparasitized when I collected them. So alternatively, in populations with low or no peristatism pressure, there's a high probability of sampling psyllid individuals that do not harbor the secondary symbiont, that are unparasitized. So what this relationship may suggest is it may actually be a benefit for psyllid individuals that harbor the secondary symbiont in populations with high peristatism pressures. So that brings me to my current hypothesis, which I postulate that secondary symbiont infection is a benefit for psyllid hosts in populations with high peristatism pressure because secondary symbionts may actually be conferring resistance to the parasitoid. So this is analogous reasoning actually straight from what is being found in the PAFID study system. However, secondary symbiont infection is a cost for psyllid hosts in populations with low peristatism pressure. So I include cost in this particular hypothesis because as of yet, I haven't found a single population that is at 100% infection, not even populations that have high peristatism pressure. So to test this hypothesis, I'm investigating several approaches. I'm going to present to you two so far that I've done. So the first approach is a theoretical one. So I've already developed a general infection frequency model, which I display down here. And I don't have time to go through all the parameters, but what this model results suggest is that resistance may actually be occurring in these secondary symbiont-infected psyllids, in addition to an increase in fecundity, which is particularly interesting. So another approach that I'm also conducting, a little bit more definitive, is an empirical approach. So I'm conducting manipulative peristatism trials between uninfected and infected psyllids. And these trials are currently in progress at the moment. I'm also trying to validate the particular model parameter estimates as well to see how good my model is. So in conclusion then, I found that there's only one type of secondary symbiont among all psyllid populations in California. Also, secondary symbiont infection frequencies vary dramatically among populations. And this variation, then, in infection frequencies is significantly related to parasitism pressure. And I think this relationship is really interesting. It's the first time it has been found in any natural field population for an insect host. So in addition, if the secondary symbiont is actually conferring resistance to a parasitoid, this definitely has major implications for the efficacy of biocontrol agents, especially for invasive species management. So I think it'd be good idea to look into the role of symbioses in pest management a little further. So at this time, I'd thank the following individuals and take questions at this time.
Any questions?
Yeah.
I noticed in your graph that it looks like the Central Valley had a low peristatism or low rate of the symbiont.
Yeah. Right. I have no idea why the Central Valley. There is the mountain range that runs west to east in California, so there might be a block of genetic flow for these psyllids to get into the Central Valley from Southern California. And so that might be a reason why there's kind of a geographic barrier preventing infection frequencies from completely emerging. So it's a good question. Yeah?
You use a universal primer to detect the secondary simian. Do you have any further work to characterize it? Do you have any idea what it might be?
Yeah, I did quite a bit of work on the genetic characterization. First, I started with the universal primers from Bauman's papers and Nancy Moran's papers. And so this is just a large fragment between the 16S and 23S ribosomal RNA region of the bacteria. So it's a very large fragment. It spans through the IGS region, which is incredibly variable. So first, you screen it out to see how many bands you get, how many symbionts you can get. And then I did I sequenced these, and I found actually two ribosomal operons within this bacteria. And so all bacteria have more than one ribosomal operon usually, so you have to be careful when you characterize this. And so I further developed some more specific primers for the symbiont for further analysis. So it was quite a bit of work cloning and sequencing. So, but the paper is out on all my techniques, so if you want to look at that.
Thank you. That's all the time for questions.
Okay, thank you.